Welcome to Mysterious Topics, a podcast focusing on intriguing topics deserving further scrutiny. Each episode, the hosts examine a topic, add their opinions, and hopefully pique your interest as well. Visit MysteriousTopics.com for contact information and more. Now, here are your hosts, Chuck and John.
Hello, Chuck.
Hello, John, and hello to all of our listeners. Before we get started today, just a reminder, please visit us at MysteriousTopics.com. And if you are planning on shopping anytime in the near future at Amazon.com, click on the icon at our website before you go shopping at Amazon. And if you do, that would help us out a little bit and help defray some of our expenses. And we would appreciate that. Today, our topic is about someone that most of us have heard about over the years, that we often hear about different prophets. I often think of Gene Dixon, who supposedly predicted the death of John F. Kennedy and other famous predictions that she has made. But if you want to go way back to the 1500s, there's someone who wrote many different, they call them quatrains, which are four-line poems. And his name is Nostradamus, and that'll be our topic today.
And we'll start with a little background. This is from Wikipedia.org. Michel de Nostradam, and depending on the source, was born December 14th or 21st of 1503 and died July 2nd of 1566. But of course, we know him much more by his Latinized name, Nostradamus. And Nostradamus was a French apothecary and reputed seer who published collections of prophecies that have since become widely famous. He is best known for his book Les Prophéties, the first edition of which appeared in 1555. Since the publication of this book, which has rarely been out of print since his death, Nostradamus has attracted a following that, along with much of the popular press, credits him with predicting many major world events. Born in Saint-Rémy-de-Provence, Provence, France, where his claimed birthplace still exists, Michel de Nostradam was one of at least nine children of notary Jean or Jacques de Nostradam and Renée, granddaughter of Pierre de Saint-Rémy, who worked as a physician in Saint-Rémy. Jean's family had originally been Jewish, but his father, Crescuas, a grain and money dealer based in Avignon, had converted to Catholicism around 1459 to 1460, taking the Christian name Pierre and the surname Nostradam, or Our Lady, the saint on whose day his conversion was solemnized. The earliest ancestor who can be identified on the paternal side is Astruge of Carcassonne, who died about 1420. Michel's known siblings include Delphine Jean, who was born 1507 and lived till 1577, Pierre Hector Louis Bertrand, Jean II, born 1522, and Antoine, born 1523. Little else is known about his childhood, although there is a persistent tradition that he was educated by his maternal great-grandfather, Jean de Saint-Rémy, a tradition which is somewhat undermined by the fact that the latter disappears from the historical record after 1504, when Nostradamus would have been only 1 year old. And Chuck, I was thinking about this in preparing for our program today, of when I was first made aware of Nostradamus, and I know it was very early. I think I was probably about 14 years old when my parents gave me a sweatshirt for a gift, and it was my last name spelled backwards, which is Nostratap, which sounds very similar to Nostradamus. So I was somewhat obsessed with Nostradamus at that point. And I know I probably had a paperback book on Nostradamus, and I'm just not sure. I don't think there was anything on TV back then about him on one of the three channels we had. So it must have been a book that I found at school.
I think it's interesting that you did have a paperback. I had a paperback. I don't think I have it any longer. Maybe it's the same one you had that was probably published. Well, at least the edition I had was probably published in the 70s, 1970s. But, I don't know how I got interested either, but I've known about him for a long time. And I think it's also interesting that you might have some kind of a connection with him because your backwards name is a little bit similar to his name. So that gives you somewhat of a connection to Nostradamus.
Yeah, and his Nostradamus name backwards would not be similar to mine, but...
No. But we'll go with Nostradamus.
Imadderson? Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Well, getting back to the program here, we're going to talk about his student years right now. At the age of 15, Nostradamus entered the University of Avignon to study for his baccalaureate. After a little more than a year, when he would have studied the regular trivium of grammar, rhetoric, and logic, rather than the later quadrivium of geometry, arithmetic, music, and astronomy/astrology. He was forced to leave Avignon when the university closed its doors in the face of an outbreak of the plague. After leaving Avignon, Nostradamus, by his own account, traveled the countryside for 8 years from 1521, researching herbal remedies. In 1529, after some years as an apothecary, he entered the University of Montpellier to study for a doctorate in medicine. He was expelled shortly afterwards by the student procurator, Guillaume Rondelet, when it was discovered that he had been an apothecary, which a manual trade expressly banned by the university statutes. I have no idea why. And he had been slandering doctors, apparently. The expulsion document, BIU Montpellier, and some other numbers, still exists in the faculty library. However, some of his publishers and correspondents will later call him doctor. After his expulsion, Nostradamus continued working, presumably still as an apothecary, and became famous for creating a rose pill that supposedly protected against the plague. Now, if he really did create that rose pill and it was effective, my goodness, that would have been wonderful.
It certainly would have been, and I just wonder what was in that rose pill to make it, first of all, a rose color, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to know. On the other hand, it could have been just sort of a placebo, which maybe people felt they were protected and it worked that way. Who knows?
Well, that's very possible. It also might be the case where he uses prophetic powers to determine what might be effective against the plague.
Yes. Yeah, that could very well be. Well, in 1531, Nostradamus was invited by Jules César Scaliger, a leading Renaissance scholar, to come to Agen. There he married a woman of uncertain name, possibly Henriette d'Encausset, who bore him two children. In 1534, his wife and children died, presumably from the plague. After their deaths, he continued to travel, passing through France and possibly Italy. Now, in that part, they just kind of skip over a lot of the details in there, but I know from reading about him from years ago that obviously he was very distraught. He tried very hard to save his family from the plague, and when he couldn't, he felt he was a failure and a sort of a fraud, and that's why he left and traveled around. He was just so distraught over losing his family, and he was the one person that supposedly could help protect you from the plague, and he couldn't protect his own family. So that was a very devastating event in his life.
Yeah. I was just thinking about what you just said. Plus, I was thinking about his writings. And it must have been pretty well known back when he was still alive that some of his predictions were actually pretty accurate. And if that's the case, that's probably why he was published. But I'm thinking there were probably many people that had similar thoughts back then who were not published. But I think it's fortunate and interesting that his writings were saved and they're still available today. And like you mentioned at the very beginning, it's probably been in publication ever since in one form or another.
Right. Many people writing books about him and put his whole works in there and then examine them. Yes. But at this point, he was not published. He was, this is 1534. His book wasn't published until 1555, although he was known about. And I don't know at this point if he was telling anyone of his prophecies to this point, but it will start soon. So after that devastating event in 1534, when his family died from the plague, and he traveled around France and possibly Italy, on his return in 1545, he assisted the prominent physician Louis Serra in his fight against a major outbreak in Marseille, and then tackled further outbreaks of disease on his own in Salon-de-Provence and in the regional capital, Aix-en-Provence. Finally, in 1547, he settled in Salon-de-Provence in the house, which exists today, where he married a rich widow named Anne Ponsardet, with whom he had 6 children, 3 daughters, and 3 sons. Between 1556 and 1567, he and his wife acquired a 1/13th share in a huge canal project organized by Adam de Craponnet to irrigate largely waterless Salon-de-Provence and the nearby Desert de la Croix from the River Durance.
After another visit to Italy, Nostradamus began to move away from medicine and toward the occult. Following popular trends, he wrote an almanac for 1550. For the first time, Latinizing his name from Nostradamus to Nostradamus, as we know it today. He was so encouraged by the almanac's success that he decided to write one or more annually. Taken together, they are known to have contained at least 6,338 prophecies, as well as at least 11 annual calendars, all of them starting on the 1st of January, and not, as is supposed sometimes, in March. It was mainly in response to the almanacs that the nobility and other prominent persons from far away soon started asking for horoscopes and psychic advice from him, though he generally expected his clients to supply the birth charts on which these would be based, rather than calculating them himself as a professional astrologer would have done. When obliged to attempt this himself on the basis of the published tables of the day, he frequently made errors and failed to adjust the figures for his client's place or time of birth.
And so obviously he wasn't really into the astrology part. He was just taking the information they gave him and trying to tell them what was in their charts based on that. So I think mainly the errors were made by the people giving him the information.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Or at least he wasn't going and getting the rest of the information of where exactly or what time exactly they were born, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So people, apparently, a lot of people believed in that sort of thing back then, though.
And they probably still do today.
Yeah, well, there certainly are. He then began his project of writing a book of 1,000 mainly French quatrains, which constitute the largely undated prophecies for which he is most famous today. Feeling vulnerable to opposition on religious grounds, however, he devised a method of obscuring his meaning by using Virgilian-based syntax, word games, and a mixture of other languages such as Greek, Italian, Latin, and Provençal. For technical reasons, connected with their publication in 3 installments, the publisher of the 3rd and last installment seems to have been unwilling to start it in the middle of a century or book of 100 verses. The last 58 quatrains of the 7th century have not survived in any extant edition. The quatrains published in a book titled Les Prophéties, or The Prophecies, received a mixed reaction when they were published. Some people thought Nostradamus was a servant of evil, a fake, or insane, while many of the elite evidently thought otherwise. Catherine de Médicis, wife of King Henry II of France, was one of Nostradamus's greatest admirers. After reading his almanacs for 1555, which hinted at unnamed threats to the royal family, she summoned him to Paris to explain them and to draw up horoscopes for her children. At the time, he feared that he would be beheaded, but by the time of his death in 1566, Queen Catherine had made him counselor and physician in ordinary to her son, the young King Charles IX of France.
When you mention Queen Catherine worrying about what might happen to the royal family, some threats, reminded me of Nancy Reagan when she was first lady, and she apparently had an astrologer offering advice to her about...
I think it was Jean Dixon.
Is that who it was? Sure. That's right. So that kind of reminded me of the same thing with Queen Catherine here. Some accounts of Nostradamus' life state that he was afraid of being persecuted for heresy by the Inquisition, but neither prophecy nor astrology fell in this bracket, and he would have been in danger only if he had practiced magic to support them. In 1538, he came into conflict with the church in Aachen after an inquisitor visited the area looking for anti-Catholic views. His brief imprisonment at Marignani in late 1561 was solely because he had violated a recent royal decree by publishing his 1562 almanac without the prior permission of a bishop. His poetic yet cryptic quatrains are claimed by some to conceal information about future events. He completed a total of 942 quatrains, which he organized into centuries, or groups of 100 quatrains. One century had only 42 quatrains. And like we mentioned earlier, a quatrain is simply a poem with four lines. I think it's interesting, John, that he probably did this hiding of the information by using different tricks to camouflage some of the meanings that he had in his mind. And yet, when we're looking at the quatrains today, many people perhaps are skeptical of the whole situation because some of those quatrains can mean just about anything. It's how you interpret them. And although some, if you aren't interpret them in the way many people have, they really came out pretty accurate.
And I can understand where he would want to sort of encrypt them, especially the ones that were predicting things of his time with the church and people thinking he's evil or something else. But some of the ones that he's talking about in our time, many, many years in the future, where people think that he's doing the same thing, he did sort of encrypt them, but he has to use the language that he knows of his time to describe something that he is apparently seeing of this time that he has no description for. Many of all the technology he's seeing, he does use words which may, you think, obscure what he's talking about, but I don't think he's doing that on purpose. I think he's just trying to explain something he's seeing that he doesn't really know what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. And languages do change over time, even in our English language. The words and the phrases that we might have used 100 years ago often are much different today than what they were back then. And so we're talking with Nostradamus being 500 years ago. I can see how some of his comments or writings were totally obscured. And of course, he was writing in French, which had to be translated to English and
French and Latin and many other. He was using several different languages to obscure it. And also, for instance, obviously, they didn't have jets or rockets flying around at that time. So if he sees that in the future, he's got to use words of his time to explain it. And we'll get into that as we go along here. Everyone will be able to see that.
Right. Well, how credible are his quatrains? We'll take a look at some now and we'll let you decide. The rhymed quatrains of Nostradamus were written mainly in French with a bit of Italian, Greek, and Latin thrown in. He intentionally obscured the quatrains through the use of symbolism and metaphor, as well as by making changes to proper names by swapping, adding, or removing letters. The obscuration is claimed to have been to avoid his being tried as a magician. Of course, a skeptic might say it was done so the quatrains could be interpreted to fit numerous situations.
And that might be true, and it is true. I mean, everybody can interpret them different, just as they do certain phrases in the Bible, interpret them very differently. And those, I assume, weren't written to purposely obscure. So I just don't know why or how he could figure that out way back then, that he could purposely write something that we, some 500 years later, are still having a problem interpreting.
Right.
Now, we go to an article from BusinessInsider.com titled 11 Shockingly Accurate Predictions from Nostradamus. And this is by Christina Sturbins and Robert Johnson of May 30th of 2014. French apothecary and purported prophet Nostradamus may have his skeptics, but you can't deny his ideas have staying power. He wrote his first book, Les Prophéties, in 1555, and publishing companies still roll out copies today. There's even a Nostradamus for Dummies. In the text of his book, each four-line block, called a quatrain, attempts to predict the future. While logic might suggest Nostradamus's claim could apply to almost any event, some of them come eerily close to reality. In these 11 cases, we couldn't ignore his speculative prowess. And the first one is the death of Henry II, as we were talking about earlier, and his prediction for Henry II, who was the husband of Queen Catherine, who we were speaking about earlier, who had him as a personal physician for her kids. Anyway, his prediction for Henry II reads, "The young lion will overcome the older one. On the field of combat, in a single battle, he will pierce his eyes through a golden cage, two wounds made one, then he dies a cruel death." So what actually happened? France's King Henry II lined up to joust Gabriel, Count de Montgomery, Seigneur de Lourdes, a nobleman, 6 years his junior, in the summer of 1559. In their final pass, Montgomery's lance tilted up and splintered into two shards. One went through the king's visor and hit his eye, and the other lodged in his temple. Henry suffered for 10 days before dying in his bed. Some reports say their shields displayed lion emblems. Though disagreement exists, skeptics also claim field of battle in the quatrain probably shouldn't apply to the friendly jousting match that killed Henry II.
Well, if that was a friendly jousting match, they had pretty dangerous friendly activities back then.
Well, jousting in general, even though you're just doing it as sort of a friendly match or practice, as it were. First of all, it's still dangerous running or riding a horse towards each other fairly fast with a big pole. Yeah, regardless of whether you're just doing it for fun or not, there's a certain amount of risk involved. And second, you know, skeptics will say, well, the field of battle, that doesn't count for just a jousting match. But I don't know, if you're just seeing these things and you're seeing a little snapshot of that time, how are you supposed to get everything? You may have just seen these two horses running at each other, and how do you know if it's happening on the field of battle or it's a jousting match? You're just seeing that play out.
Well, that's a good point. Like you just mentioned, you can't expect him to know everything about every little detail that happens in the future. So, yeah, that's true. Well, the next prediction, the Great Fire of London. Now, here's his quatrain. "The blood of the just will be lacking in London, burnt up in the fire of 66. The ancient lady will topple from her high place. Many of the same sect will be killed." Now, here's what really happened in regards to the Fire of London. On September 2nd, 1666, a small fire in Thomas Farriner's bakery on Pudding Lane in London turned into a three-day blaze that consumed the city. It became known as the Great Fire of London. Peasant deaths weren't recorded at the time, but many historians claim at least 8 people died in the blaze. Thousands of houses and businesses were burned as well. Blood of the Just might refer to the elimination of millions of flea-carrying rats that spread the Black Death. That deadly plague died out during the Great Fire. So apparently that Great Fire did a lot of good as far as getting rid of some of those rats, or millions of those rats that spread the Black Plague.
Yeah, and so that's 1666. This is 100 years after Nostradamus died, and they were dealing with the Black Plague back then also.
Yeah, and he wrote Burnt Up in the Fire of 66, so he had the year right, at least the last two numbers of the year.
Yeah, and I'm amazed that only 8 people died in that tremendous fire.
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing as I was reading that.
Now, the next one is about the French Revolution. And his quatrain reads, "Songs, chants, and demands will come from the enslaved, held captive by the nobility in their prisons. At a later date, brainless idiots will take these as divine utterances." Well, what happened? In 1789, the French people decided they had enough of aristocrat rule. They revolted, storming the Bastille, a Paris fortress used as a prison. The fall of the Bastille, which symbolized the monarchy's abuses, marked the height of the French Revolution. The peasants quickly took control of Paris and enforced their demands by kidnapping the royals. Some of them were even beheaded.
So as we go along here, John, what do you think? Do you think these first three that we just mentioned are pretty accurate?
I think the first two were extraordinarily accurate. I think this last one about the French Revolution, a little more obscure, but you could still say it certainly applies to that.
Right. And I can imagine among our listeners, there's probably maybe an equal number on either side that some would say, oh, this is just coincidence, or you can stretch any 4-line poem into meaning whatever you want it to mean. And yet, I'm sure there are many that believe, hey, this really is pretty incredible. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, we have a lot of material to go through yet, and I'm sure that maybe some of our listeners who feel one way or the other may be flip-flopping back and forth as we go.
And I might be too. I don't know. Well, now we go on to the next one, which is Napoleon's conquest. Here's the prediction. Panez, Laurent, more fire than blood. Swimming in praise, the great man hurries to the confluence. He will refuse entry to the magpies. Pepin and Durance will confine them. Now, here's what happened. Panez and Laurent referenced 3 towns in Paris, although the last is actually named Oloron. By using them, Nostradamus employed one of his favorite devices, the anagram. Rearranging the city's letters spells Napoleon Roy, which eerily resembles Napoleon, the king in French. So he was changing a little bit of the spelling to indicate it was truly Napoleon. More of fire than of blood may refer to the non-noble lineage of Napoleon, who took power during a coup. Refuse entry to the magpies could refer to Popes Pius VI and VII, both of whom Napoleon imprisoned.
So these are the ones I have a little more problem with, when he uses anagrams, or when they say he uses anagrams. So that is a slight bit more of a stretch. I don't know why he just couldn't come out and say Napoleon the King. That does make it more obscure, and I have slightly more issue than that, but I don't know why he would have to go to those lengths when he's predicting something that's obviously going to happen long after he dies. But, okay, so let's go on to the next. King Philip II of Spain's reign. And the quatrain on this reads, "For 7 years, Philip's fortunes will prosper. He will reduce the Arab army. Then, halfway through, things will perplexedly turn against him. a young onion will destroy his fortune. And what actually happened with this? Catholic King Philip II of Spain started ruling the country in 1556, and Spain became unbelievably wealthy for the first part of his reign. Seven could be interpreted biblically, meaning a long time. His success, however, came to an unexpected halt in 1587 with the execution of Mary, Queen of Scots, who was also Catholic. Her death effectively ended his alliance with England. A year later, he tried to invade England with his Spanish Armada fleet of ships, but England thwarted him. The quatrain also hints at the Battle of Lepanto, where Spain slaughtered the fleet of the Ottoman Empire, an area to the south inhabited by many Arabs. Philip would later call for Muslim expulsion from Spain. Lastly, the young onion refers to 36-year-old Henry IV of France, a Huguenot and thus Protestant. He and Philip disagreed on religion and battled until Henry's death.
I'm trying to figure out why that word onion was used.
I don't know that either.
Would onion be referred to as somewhat, as a negative term, as someone that has opposite views of your own, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, well, it could be also looked at as positive. So this is the problem with a lot when trying to interpret these, but an onion would be considered strong or could be considered odorous.
Yeah, either way.
Yeah.
Well, now we go on to Louis Pasteur's discoveries. And here's the prediction. The lost thing is discovered, hidden for many centuries. Pasteur will be celebrated almost as a godlike figure. This is when the moon completes her great cycle. But by other rumors, he shall be dishonored. Here's what really happened. Now this, remember, this is almost 300 years after Nostradamus' time. Born in 1822, Louis Pasteur was a French chemist and microbiologist who discovered that the growth of microorganisms causes fermentation. That discovery also proved bacteria doesn't simply appear spontaneously as previously thought. Instead, it grows from already living organisms in a process called biogenesis. While Pasteur didn't first propose germ theory, he convinced much of Europe of its validity. He invented a process for removing bacteria called pasteurization, which is named after him, of course. His early work also led to the creation of vaccines for rabies and anthrax. However, in 1995, 170 years later, science historian Gerald L. Geisen published a book showing Pasteur incorporated a rival's findings to make his anthrax vaccine functional. That finding partly dishonored the great scientist, as Nostradamus predicted.
Now,
That was the last line of his quatrain, but by other rumors he shall be dishonored.
And these are the quatrains which, to me, are just unbelievable, because that is spot on. I mean, you can't say that that's ambiguous in any way, shape, or form. He nailed that one.
Well, he used Pasteur's name exactly.
Yes.
And he referred to him as a godlike figure, which he pretty much was because of his inventions.
And people reading Nostradamus from the time that Louis Pasteur made all of his findings, the pasteurization process and all the great things he came up with. So people reading Nostradamus's predictions, and they would have, like you said, that last line. If they were reading that in the late 1800s or all during the 1900s before 1995, they would have thought, well, he really nailed all that except that last part. He was never discredited. And then all of a sudden along 1995, this historian comes up with this information, and now he is slightly discredited, and that completes a 100% accurate prediction from Nostradamus.
And this one, of all of the predictions he made so far as we're going along, is, like you said, the most valid one, the most accurate of all of them, that's for sure.
Yes. And I think that the Henry II one is unbelievably accurate as well. I mean, how do you say that a joust or what do you call those things, a jousting pole, splinters into two, and both pieces hit him in the head. I mean, that's in my way of thinking, that's pretty darn accurate as well.
The next one that you're going to talk about, John, I think I've heard about this one many, many times, and it sticks in my mind. So when you go ahead, we'll see how that one turns out.
And this is Hitler's Terror in Europe. And the quatrain reads, "From the depths of the west of Europe, a young child will be born of poor people. He who by his tongue will seduce a great troop, his fame will increase towards the realm of the east." And another quatrain on the same topic, "Beasts ferocious with hunger will cross the rivers. The greater part of the battlefield will be against Hister. In a cage of iron will the great one be drawn, when the child of Germany observes nothing." And what happened? Hitler, who was born to poor parents in 1889 in Western Europe, used his intense oratory skills to mobilize the Nazi Party in Germany in the years following World War I. Germany, as a part of the Axis powers, also allied with Japan in the East. While many believe Hister to be a typo, it's also an old name for the Danube River. Hitler was born just miles from that river in what was then Austria-Hungary, also known as the Danube Monarchy. Remember, Nostradamus often incorporated anagrams, such as Hister, into his writing.
And that's the part that I think many of us have heard about over the years. Hister / Hitler, did he mean the same thing? Was it the river? Was it just changing the name around a little bit to disguise it? I don't know. And one thing about Hitler, which was mentioned in these quatrains, "He who by his tongue will seduce a great troop." And I know, obviously, we don't understand German. I was always puzzled by how his speeches could basically mesmerize people. He mesmerized millions of people and convinced them to go along with his evil ways in many cases.
Yeah, and he was always very passionate when he was almost shouting with anger, but I think it was sort of like a football coach here, or in other parts of the world, their football, soccer, as we call it. Maybe their coaches get fired up like that before a game and give a big pre-speech and get these guys completely ready to go out there and, in our case, in U.S. football, because there's a lot of physicality in that sport. A lot of people have to get fired up to go banging against other people that hard. And it kind of reminds me of something of that.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, I often thought many people were just afraid of what might happen to them if they didn't show honor and respect to Hitler. But I think it was more than that. I think he actually mesmerized them in some way with his speech. And some people just have the ability to do that, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I think it was almost like a snowball effect rolling down a hill as it starts to gain momentum. More and more people, you hear him saying something that you might think, well, wait a minute. But then you look and see the other top men of the country standing there by him, and everybody around you is like buying into it. And so if you don't, as Hitler did at the time, many people that didn't, all of a sudden they weren't there.
Yeah, that reminds me today. In North Korea, you often hear of some of the top leaders in the country suddenly disappearing or being executed. And you see photos of gatherings where the leader of the country is giving a speech or talking, and you see all the people in attendance clapping and smiling. And I'm thinking, if the leader looks at them in the picture or in a photograph later or in a documentary of some sort and sees them not clapping or not smiling, that might be the end of them.
Yes, and I do think there is, in these cases, there's a certain amount of brainwashing, and there's a certain amount of people just realizing that if they say anything against it, that they're the ones that are going to be taken away and never seen again.
Right. Well, moving on to the next prediction. This is Charles de Gaulle's leadership. Now, the prediction in the form of a quatrain, Hercules become king of Rome and of Denmark. A man named de Gaulle is a three-time leader. Italy and the waters of Venice will tremble. He will be renowned above all monarchs. What happened? Charles de Gaulle, again, his name is exactly as it was spelled in the quatrain. A three-time leader began as the leader of the Free French Forces, France's government in exile based in London during World War II. He then became prime minister of the provisional post-World War II government. Finally, in 1959, he undertook the first presidency of the French Fifth Republic.
Well, again, that one is very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next one we're going to discuss is about the atomic bomb. And his quatrain reads, "The heavenly dart will stretch its course. Death, in the speaking, a great achievement. The proud nation brought low by the stone in the tree. Rumors of a monstrous human bring purge, then expiation." And what happened? In August of 1945, the United States dropped two atomic bombs on the island nation of Japan in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Many historians argue the tragedy marked the end of World War II. Those who escaped immediate detonation suffered a painful radiation poisoning, and many died. A stone in the tree in Nostradamus' quatrain could describe the shape of the mushroom cloud that engulfed the sky above the city. It could also mean a land-bound object, like a stone and a bomb, paradoxically appearing where it shouldn't, or a tree or the sky. Now, that one's a little bit more obscure, Chuck, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that analogy of the tree in the sky being the mushroom cloud, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible, but as I said, that one isn't quite as definitive as the other ones we discussed.
Right. Now we go on to John F. Kennedy's assassination. Here's the prediction. "The ancient task will be completed. From on high, evil will fall on the great man. A dead innocent will be accused of the deed. The guilty on will remain in the mist." And here's what happened. John F. Kennedy's assassination in 1963 undoubtedly came from on high. The bullet entered his head from the roof level. The man accused of the crime, Lee Harvey Oswald, didn't live long enough to face trial. A Dallas nightclub owner killed him while in police custody. Oswald also persistently claimed he was a patsy and therefore innocent. Even today, we don't know for sure who killed JFK. According to a recent Gallup poll, 61% of Americans believe it was a conspiracy.
And we have discussed the Kennedy assassination a few times in some of our other podcasts. And I will dispute a little bit the fact that they're saying that the bullet came from roof level. We don't actually know that to be the case. It would appear that the bullet did not come from Oswald's gun on the third floor of the book depository, but possibly from the famous grassy knoll, which would have still been higher than the car slightly. So that's what that could be referring to. I'm not going to assume that they're talking about it coming from the building, however. And of course, as we talked about this before, most people that look at the facts realize there was a whole lot of funny business going on, or definitely cover-ups, and there's just so many things to indicate that they were not telling the true story of what actually happened. All, you know, with the bullet going through a couple different people and then magically appearing on a table in the hospital, and it being a new bullet, not having looked like it had been shot at all. And that's supposedly the bullet that they found. It's just all very suspicious.
Like you said, we discussed this at least a couple of different podcasts. And I agree. At the time when it happened back in 1963, I believed everything I heard as far as what really happened in the assassination of Kennedy. But today, I am more skeptical than I ever was. So who really knows what happened? I don't know if we're ever going to know for sure.
In regards to his prediction, he does not mention Kennedy's name, and it starts off by saying the ancient task will be completed from on high. Evil will fall on the great man. So I imagine ancient task is referring to many times people are assassinated through history, I suppose.
That's probably true. When you mention that.
And also the final part of that is the guilty will remain in the mist. So in other words, the people who really perpetrated the crime will remain unknown, which is what we think is still going on today.
That line is probably, or might be very, very accurate, yeah.
Were you going to say something else on that?
Well, you mentioned the ancient task will be completed, and you're referring to all the assassination attempts or actual assassinations carried out through history. And I was, as we were reading earlier, we mentioned how this queen and that king were executed. And I'm thinking, boy, they really executed a lot of people for really small reasons way back in the Middle Ages. And I was always, this isn't the first time, obviously, I've read or heard about that, but I've always wondered why in the world were there so many executions? It just seemed too easy to do. And that's all I wanted to say about that.
Well, yeah, that was just, I guess, the ultimate thing. If somebody is really annoying you, that would certainly take care of that problem.
I guess.
And the next quatrain refers to 9/11, or September 11th of 2001. The quatrain reads, "The sky will burn at 45 degrees. Fire approaches the great new city. By fire, he will destroy their city. A cold and cruel heart, blood will pour, mercy to none." And what happened, of course, on the morning of September 11, 2001, hijacked planes crashed into two towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. Scholars interpret 45 degrees as either a reference to New York City's proximity to the 45th latitude, or that the burning buildings would fall, creating a 45-degree angle to the ground, even though they collapsed onto themselves. And I would say that that one is fairly accurate based on the 45-degree parallel that New York City sits on. But, you know, there's still, I could see where skeptics would say, well, that's very obscure. However, you're talking about some 500 years later. Considering the time period, I would still consider that one fairly accurate.
Yeah, and he did use the word new in referring to the city, and of course, New York. So it's a new city in that regard, too. So that part kind of sticks out. But yeah, it is somewhat obscure.
So now we're going to go to an article from predictionsofnostradamus.com. It's undeniable that Nostradamus divined about the victory of Obama in the elections taking place in 2013. But then he made another prediction that this African-American man would become the last president of the American country. By saying so, it could deliver the specific time has come for the country just to pass the torch to someone else. Then who is going to be the one receiving that torch or become the next superpower? Is it in China, North Korea, or Russia? It appears that nothing can be decided in great certainty.
The following is from Nostradamus.usa.com. The hypothetical chronology. The challenge was to unveil the future as we enter the third millennium AD. Nostradamus was a man who had a message, yet making sense of his message would be in vain unless a clearer view of potential future events could be obtained. Remember the future, the prophecies of Nostradamus. This is an abridged version of the centuries. Attempts to focus on events which could possibly be fulfilled between 2000 and 2050, the year 2000 and 2050. However, some of the quatrains included in this book may not be fulfilled until decades or centuries later. If it appears that Nostradamus was accurate in his predictions pertaining to the last four centuries, then odds are his future predictions pertaining to natural disasters, Euro-Arab conflicts, the war with the future third Antichrist, and other events are most likely accurate and relevant as well. We could build a case for the accuracy of the quatrains pertaining to the future based upon the perceived accuracy of Nostradamus' quatrains pertaining to the past.
With this in mind, we should consider that Nostradamus was a Frenchman of Jewish descent. He was a Christian and appeared to be interested in protecting his homeland of France, the followers of Christianity, as well as all humanity, against future danger and potential enemies of peace. In an attempt to make sense of the future, we can develop hypothetical scenarios of possible future events by linking certain quatrains together with other quatrains of similar subject matter, time frames, and geographical regions. Due to Nostradamus' intentional confusion of linear time in the sequence of the quatrains, it is possible to construct hypothetical scenarios of future events which might later be proven correct or incorrect, considering the fact that we, in most cases, can only guess in which century any particular quatrain was intended to be fulfilled. Though this process could be analogous to solving the ultimate crossword puzzle regarding time frames and events, this perplexing challenge remains fair game. After all, we are in possession of the pieces of the puzzle, so our challenge is to recognize topical themes and attempt to determine the time sequence of their potential future fulfillment.
I think one little point that you just mentioned, John, where you said, considering the fact that in most cases we can only guess in which century any particular quatrain was intended to be fulfilled. And I was thinking of that when we were talking about the 9/11 events and the quatrain related to it. And I was thinking this could be used in any century in the future, so it doesn't necessarily have to apply right now. So that would kind of be the skeptic in me coming out right here as far as where to apply these quatrains. You could apply them at any time, basically, in the future, unless on certain cases where Nostradamus did indicate a year, a specific year.
Yes, and they're saying that he intentionally did not do that for some reason, although I would wonder why he wouldn't, if he knew what time frame it was happening, why he wouldn't say. Why would he intentionally not?
Right.
It just makes it more confusing for us. I wish he would have left a little better way to identify when these were happening.
Make it easier.
Yeah.
For us guys that do podcasts in the future.
But you're right. It could be some event in the future which it nails exactly instead of fitting it into the actual 9/11 one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Well, continuing on, with this in mind, the following are brief hypothetical scenarios of what may possibly lay ahead in the future. If some of the quatrains included in this book were intended to be fulfilled before the year 2050. Now, these worst-case scenarios are followed by a wide range of potential years in which some of these events could possibly occur. With the exception of quatrain 10-72, which plainly states the year 1999, and quatrains 2-46 and 10-74, which mention the change of a millennium, suggesting the times around the years 2000 or 3000. All the other dates presented in this chapter were obtained by information contained in the astrological quatrains. Rather than attempting to formulate a sequential year-to-year chronology, general themes concerning future wars and natural disasters are presented, followed by some of the hypothetical dates in which they have the potential to occur between the years 2000 and 2050 AD.
Though present political and military alliances may endear into the future, readers should consider the possibility that these alliances as they exist now may differ slightly from the ones which might be formed or restructured during the progression of the 21st century. Therefore, the possibility for the emergence of new international alliances and confederations, some being favorable to the West, others adverse, certainly exists, especially in Africa, the Middle East, the former Soviet Union, and various parts of Asia. Quatrain 2-89 appears to suggest that the United States and Russia would one day be friends again, and their combined power would appear to grow. Since the collapse of the Iron Curtain and up to the millennial era, this has indeed been the case. However, Quatrain 4-95 and 5-78 seem to suggest that this friendship might be short-lived, if these quatrains are in fact references to the United States and Russia. If by chance this latter becomes true, the reversal of friendship between them could impact many global events to come.
In Quatrain 10-72, Nostradamus predicted an event for July or September of 1999, which involves some type of military combat or other event by means of the sky. It appears that it foreshadowed NATO's air war in Serbia, the military tension between China and Taiwan, Russia's war in Chechnya, and the tragic death of John F. Kennedy Jr. Due to the timeliness of this prophecy, this particular quatrain aroused great curiosity among the public. Were you familiar with that one in particular, this quatrain in particular, John?
No.
I wasn't either, but it sounds like there's a lot of connections there. Beyond the events around the change of the millennium, it appears that conflicts between Christian and Islamic nations have the potential to occur. This could involve one or a combination of the following nations: Iran, Afghanistan, Algeria, Morocco, Pakistan, Tunisia, Syria, Libya, Sudan, Iraq, various nations of the former Soviet Union, and others, against Turkey, Italy, France, Germany, Austria, Spain, Portugal, Greece, Macedonia, Hungary, the United States, Israel, the United Kingdom, and various allies of these nations.
Just a second. I was looking for... I've got a link on here which has a link to all of his prophecies, and I was going to read 1072 if I can find it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Oh, here it is. Should I read it?
Yeah.
Well, we just referred to Quatrain 1072, and it's basically called the 9/11 prophecy. And it states, in the year 1999, in the seventh month, from the sky will come the great king of terror, bringing back to life the great king of the Mongols, before and after Mars to reign by good fortune. So I don't know how that applies here. But.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's 1072?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that's the one that's supposed to foreshadow NATO's air war in Serbia, the military tension between China and Taiwan, and Russia's war in Chechnya. And the tragic death of John F. Kennedy Jr.?
I guess so.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
No, I'm not either.
It certainly, I don't know how you could say it applies to any one of those with any accuracy or detail.
Yeah, I'm skeptical on this one.
Okay. Well, continuing on here, by land, various Islamic armies and their allies might one day invade Turkey, Macedonia, Greece, Hungary, the former Yugoslavia, Austria, and eventually march towards Italy, attacking the Italians and other forces located there. From Italy, the invaders could then attack other nations in various parts of Europe. It appears that Greece might endure chemical or biological warfare in these conflicts. See Quatrains 9-91, 5-47, and 6-21. Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, and Libya may attempt to vex Egypt by land. By sea, these same North African nations appear to invade the southern coastline of France, Monaco, and Spain, then deeper into Europe. Some of these conflicts could occur in one massive sweep, or they might take place over an extended period of years. In addition to land war, these conflicts seem to involve heavy naval warfare in the Mediterranean, Tyrrhenian, and Aegean seas. The nations of NATO, or its future equivalent, and their various allies appear to eventually prevail in these conflicts.
The fate of Israel remains unclear. However, in paragraph number 34 of the epistle, Nostradamus states that Jerusalem might be assailed on all sides, and a Western naval force, from the United States and or other nations in the New World will help Israel in fighting the forces of its future adversaries. According to astrological information, the years for the potential occurrence of these conflicts between the period of the year 2000 to 2050, well, there could be any number of them, 2000, 2002, 13, 15, 16, 17, 19, 21, 30, 37, 38, and 44. So I'm not sure what the astrological information is that indicates those years would be possible, but apparently that's the case.
Well, and I would think that you could say that Jerusalem right now is assailed on all sides. In other words, there are people, countries, and people against them that border every part of their little country.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except, of course, there's the Mediterranean on the western portion, which they could easily be assailed from there, too. But they're under constant threat, and you could say that right now the United States and the allied nations of the United States are, with their diplomacy, are helping to protect Jerusalem from being assaulted.
That's correct.
One should consider the possibility that the Euro-Arab or Muslim-Christian conflicts might occur before, during, or after the war with the yet-to-arrive third Antichrist. How Euro-Arab conflicts interrelate with the war with the third Antichrist is unclear at this time. Some of them will be part of his war, and some of them might be precursory or unrelated independent events. Nostradamus appears to suggest that the future third Antichrist will come from a region east of the Black Sea. In paragraph 23 of the epistle, he states that the grand empire of the Antichrist shall begin in the region of the former empire of Attila. Attila was the leader of the Asian Huns who invaded Europe during the 5th century. Nostradamus refers to the third Antichrist as the new Xerxes. Xerxes was the Persian king who unsuccessfully invaded Greece in 480 BC.
Well, Nostradamus intentionally used the names Attila and Xerxes as allusions to personality types and geographical areas. Thus, in a geographical sense, this suggests that he was referring to various regions of Eastern Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. The army of the third Antichrist, an enemy of peace, will begin its trek towards Europe from a region between the Caspian and Black Seas. It appears that they will pass through Alania, which is in southwestern Russia, and Armenia, then into Turkey, and that's from Quatrain 5-54. From there, they invade most all of Europe.
The naval forces of the third Antichrist will be accompanied by the Libyan fleet into the Mediterranean and Adriatic Seas, Quatrain 1-9. One of the climaxes of this future conflict appears to be a colossal naval engagement in the Adriatic Sea, Quatrain 527. Island locations which sustained damage in this war include Malta, Euboea, Sicily, Sardinia, the Dodecanese Islands, and the Cyclades. If the Russians are not allied with Europe and the West during the beginning of this war, Nostradamus states in the epistle that a northern king from Aquilon, an allusion to Russia, will eventually help to set things right.
This suggests that if the Russians are allied against Europe and the New World at the start of this conflict, they will reverse their position at some future point during the hostilities, and militarily realign themselves with Europe and the West in an effort to quash the Easterners. As used in Nostradamus' epistle, Easterners would be a reference to the citizens of China, former Soviet nations in Central and Eastern Asia, the Muslim nations of the Middle East and Asia, and or other countries of the Orient. Therefore, in consideration of all the prophetic information contained in the Quatrains and Epistle, it appears likely that China, in an alliance with certain Muslim nations and other countries, might be the source of future troubles for many nations around the world.
apparently various nations who embrace Christianity will be military targets of the third Antichrist. Nostradamus clearly states in his epistle that the followers of Christianity will face a horrific persecution in the future. The war of the future third Antichrist, according to Nostradamus, will last for the duration of 27 and a half years, suggesting a protracted war. Yes, that is a very protracted war. Mm-hmm. NATO, CETO, or their future equivalent, which is CEATO, and their allies appear to be victorious over the third Antichrist's forces. However, there appears to be great losses on both sides of this futuristic conflict.
Nostradamus appears to suggest that various regions will one day be struck by missiles in Europe, the West, and elsewhere. New York City might be the location of a direct hit. Now, this is from the Quatrains 4-99 and 6-97. In paragraph 33 of the epistle, Nostradamus states that a pestilence will develop in the future, which will remove 2/3 of the world's population. Could this be a reference to a futuristic nuclear or biological war? If so, could this possibly be connected with the third Antichrist war?
When will the third Antichrist make his appearance? Will he appear sometime during the first or second quarter of the 21st century? It seems possible, yet the answer remains unclear. Hopefully, he will never manifest himself and the world will be spared from his wrath. However, if he makes his appearance before the year 2050, hypothetical years for events which might involve him could be, and they have a list of many years from 2000 all the way up to 2049, and I could list off all of them. They're just about 20 of them. 2002, 2006, 2009, 11, 13, 15, 16, 19, 24, 26, 28, 30, 38, 41, 43, 44, and 49.
You sound like an auctioneer.
Yeah, so that gives a wide area of being possibly right or wrong.
Yeah. Well, in his epistle, Nostradamus stated that at some point in the future, global flooding will occur. Now, could that be a reference to global warming and the rising sea levels? No specific date is mentioned regarding its occurrence, except that it will happen sometime after the fall of the future third Antichrist. Some scientists have suggested that the possibility of universal flooding is not as remote as it may seem. Well, here it comes. Global warming appears to be real, and the average temperature of Earth continues to rise year after year, possibly due to carbon emissions from the combustion of coal and oil and other human-related factors, and not necessarily due to the natural variations of Earth's climate.
And it says it will happen sometime after the fall of the future third Antichrist, which would indicate, as we said, a 27-and-a-half-year war, which presumably a lot of bad things going on as far as bombs exploding and possibly setting fire to oil fields and that sort of thing, which would drastically raise the temperature, or if a nuclear bomb were to explode where there's a lot of frozen ice and glaciers, which would probably melt it immediately. You know, all those kind of scenarios could be a result of this global flooding.
As we're going along here, John, we're talking about all these possible wars and catastrophes and conflicts going on. It's amazing we're still living here on Earth.
Yeah, and we talk about the other life forms on other planets and if they exist and how advanced they would be. And we're getting to that point where you get this technology, which can be used for good or for bad. And how many of these life forms basically destroy themselves because they get to that point. They can't get past, they get to the technology, but they don't get to the understanding that they should use it for good and not bad. They just want that power. And so who knows? That's why I always thought that if there were an alien life form that came here that was so far advanced that they would have been able to get past that point of just going around and destroying other life forms.
That seems to be the key.
Yeah. Well, if atmospheric heating continues, sea levels could rise as much as 3 feet in the next century, and if that occurs, the universal flood Nostradamus predicted could one day become reality. A worldwide flood would have a devastating effect on the Earth. Yes, it would. In addition to flooding, if global warming continues, it could affect rainfall patterns, resulting in droughts and famine, affecting the spread of various infectious diseases. And considering the fact that Nostradamus penned many predictions pertaining to droughts, famines, floods, and pestilences, it should serve as a warning to us to consider the long-term consequences of this perplexing phenomenon.
Some modern commentators feel that Nostradamus hints at the possibility of a future polar shift, something we've talked about in earlier podcasts, as per the text in paragraph number 24 of the epistle. In example, the ongoing heating of Earth could melt the ice in the polar regions, creating not only floods, but producing conditions that could allow for an off-balancing of Earth on its axis. If a polar shift were to occur, it would cause our planet to quickly shift upon its axis, making a correction to reestablish a new center of its gravity. In the opinion of many modern scientists, in geological terms, the Earth is long overdue for a polar shift. A polar shift would be quite devastating and could trigger earthquakes and tidal waves, as well as the long-term failure of crops and ecosystems.
And we did a podcast on just that, polar shifts and the types of polar shifts that could happen and the result of them. So some of them would be just the polar shift where the magnetic poles would just reverse. And there's another type of polar shift where the Earth would actually turn over somewhat. So in other words, instead of us being at our latitude, wherever you live that you are now, you could end up on the other side of the equator or possibly even one of the poles, which would really be disastrous for that part of land.
Mm-hmm. We've been making reference to earlier podcasts quite often. Just wanted to suggest to remind listeners that all of our earlier podcasts are still out there, and you can go to our website, mysteriostopics.com, and put in a keyword of a topic you might be interested in, and it will bring up a podcast or podcast relating to that keyword or words, and you could listen to those podcasts.
Well, continuing on, some have hypothesized that the gravitational effect created by an alignment of various planets within our own solar system could also serve as a catalyst to produce a polar shift. Another event which could trigger a polar shift could be a collision between Earth and an asteroid or comet, as occurred on Jupiter in 1994. According to Velikovsky, a student of Einstein, polar shifts have occurred frequently throughout the geological history of the Earth, as referenced in his books Earth in Upheaval and Worlds in Collision.
It remains speculation as to whether or not Nostradamus was trying to suggest a polar shift by use of the phrase the Grand Translation. But if we consider that Nostradamus frequently used synonyms in his writing, we should consider it as a future possibility. If a universal flood, massive earthquakes, a polar shift, or a mighty tidal wave were to occur at some point in the future, it could act as an accelerant, initiating hostilities between nations who might otherwise be at peace with one another. I was just thinking of that last paragraph I just read here, John, and that's very true. If everyone is getting along just fine and they're comfortable in their life and in their world, the world that surrounds them, everything is going along smoothly. But if all of a sudden shortages occur, then all of a sudden people start to turn against each other. And I often worry about that if some major catastrophe would hit large cities. In the United States, for example, I worry that people would hoard some of their own supplies and turn against their neighbors even. And that's what's really scary to me, if we turn against one another. And that would be probably worse than anything for me.
Well, just take this recent example we're talking about. If a physical polar shift happened and planet shifted a quarter, so in other words, what would happen is people that are on the equator right now, and we can use South America as an example, which goes through Ecuador and across in that area, that's suddenly at the bottom of the Earth where Antarctica is now. And what happens with Antarctica, it pops up to be right on the equator again. So now, let's just say that a lot of people survived this catastrophe, which they wouldn't, or even some of the people survive. There would be a massive land grab, people trying to get to what is now Antarctica as it thaws out and as it starts to grow vegetation. That would become where everybody would want to be.
Yeah. Hard to believe, but you're right.
Yeah. So, yes, it would. Everybody would be wanting that massive piece of land that is now sitting on the equator and extending above and below it for, it's larger than the United States, Antarctica. So it would be a large chunk of land that would be in a very good location all of a sudden.
Okay, well, I don't hope to go there, but well, just continuing on what I was talking about here, a catastrophe of great magnitude might compel the militaries and the citizens of the various nations affected by it to panic in the chaos and fight over the remaining food and resources as a scramble for safe ground. That pretty much summarizes what we were just talking about.
Yes. In regards to future earthquakes between 2000 and 2050, possible dates for their occurrence as per astronomical information contained in the quatrains are as follows. Earthquakes in America and or Italy, 2015, 2016, and 2044. Earthquakes in Asia, 2013 and 2026. Worldwide earthquakes, 2048. But readers should bear in mind that Nostradamus did not make predictions for every earthquake which will rock our Earth in the future. Earthquakes can occur in various regions at any time and with no warning at all. After the defeat of the third Antichrist and the passing of the Great Flood, Nostradamus states in his epistle that a 1,000-year period of peace will prevail upon the planet. Then, new wars appear to present themselves, perhaps around the year 3100.
So, to put that into chronological terms, if we're going to have a 1,000-year peace, it would be from the year 2100 to 3100. So, that would be a good time to be alive, I guess.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll both be back by then.
Okay.
Many times.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the future will be more positive than the gloomy hypothetical scenarios presented in this chapter. After all, considering that Nostradamus took the good times for granted, we must assume that many positive and wondrous events will transpire in between future periods of peril. With the exception of natural disasters, which mankind can affect, but cannot presently control, the future is somewhat in our hands to mold. Or is it? Perhaps the challenge presented to humanity by Nostradamus's writings is to be observant, to heed the warning signs he left for our benefit. Hopefully, then, we will be better able to formulate intelligent alternatives to disaster.
If we heed Nostradamus's warnings and make a concerted effort to preserve the Earth's environment and avoid disputes among nations, then his predictions will have served the purpose of steering mankind away from self-destruction. If, on the other hand, we prove to be incapable of avoiding conflicts and disasters, then at least we have some idea of what the darker side of the future may hold. And now we're going to go to an article from AlexNolman.com, and it is titled Top 10 Nostradamus Predictions for 2017. This would be for next year, and this was posted by Alex Nodelman on March 1st of this year, 2016. We're already looking into crystal balls and checking Nostradamus's books to see what he predicted would happen in 2017. And these are the top 10 in reverse order, I guess. Number 10, Russia and Ukraine will sign a peace agreement. According to Nostradamus, 2017 will be the year Russia and the Ukraine will come to an agreement. The terms of the agreement are unclear at this time. The United States will oppose the new truce, but Germany and other EU members will embrace it. That's different from what has already happened and what we've read in mainstream media reports. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden voiced his stance in December 2015. The United States is determined to see Russia adhere to a shaky Ukrainian peace agreement and hand back Crimea to Kiev.
Ninth one, China will make bold moves. China will make bold moves to cure the economic imbalance in the world. According to Nostradamus, its actions will have far-reaching effects. Will China become the new superpower as Baba Vanga happened to predict in the 20th century? That's another podcast we did on Baba Vanga. The past decade, the notion of China becoming the world's next superpower has become almost an idée fixe, which is an idea that dominates one's mind, especially for a prolonged period, or an obsession. For global politics theorists, compared to the other so-called BRICS, which are Brazil, Russia, and India, China shines like the moon. Between 1978 and the present, China has been able to surge from being a marginal player on the global stage to a powerhouse that has attracted $2 trillion of foreign direct investment.
Oh, number eight, a year of definition for Latin America. While 27 will not be a breakout year for Latin American countries, Nostradamus also predicted that it will be a year of redefinition for them. Governments will move away from leftist policies and will help set the stage for potential civil unrest in the region.
And number seven, Italy will face financial hardship. Unemployment and loans will make Italy the epicenter of the EU financial crisis, shifting attention away from the Greeks and Spain. The Italian banking system is in serious trouble, and the failure of these banks is simply the tip of the iceberg. Non-performing loans, loans that debtors are not paying off as agreed, but which have not yet been written off by the banks, have been on the rise the past 2 years. At this point, 18% of all outstanding loans in Italy are non-performing. Reviving Italy's economy will require sacrifices, not just from Italians, but also from other EU members. Now, that's hard to do, to get other EU members to make sacrifices that are basically caused by a different country.
Yeah, there has been a lot of tension between the EU countries pertaining to the Greek financial crisis and others, to the point where I think England is voting very soon, and we're recording this in June of 2016, of possibly dropping out of the EU monetary system.
That has a worldwide impact. Even our United States stock market is affected in somewhat of a negative way by that possibility.
Yes. So number six, cloud computing will disappear. Nostradamus also predicted that the term cloud will disappear from the phrase cloud computing by 2017 because most of the computers will simply be assumed to be done in the cloud.
Well, that's probably true. And the fifth is superpower sclerosis. The current superpower, which refers to the United States, will become increasingly ungovernable and incompetent to take care of the world. Ideological polarization, political corruption, growing inequality, globalization of corporate and financial elites, and large-scale social system failures will be the growing factors in the sclerosis.
Number four, wars over global warming. Nostradamus believed the possibilities of hot wars could be escalated in 2017 due to global warming and diminishing resources. As far as the warfare itself goes, the greatest threat in the future will be terrorists and bioattacks.
Commercial space travel is number three. And commercial space travel is the real deal. But beyond orbital flights, things will become exponentially more difficult. The moon, asteroids, and mining missions are unlikely targets within the next 2 years.
Number two, more widespread use of solar power. By 2017, solar technologies could account for a significant portion of global power generation, according to Nostradamus, helping economies and businesses guard against rising energy costs and the impact of climate change. And solar power, Chuck, well, I bet you it's about 10 years ago now when it first really started to come into prominence. But over the past 10 years or so, it hasn't grown as quite thought. So if this is going to happen by 2017, it's going to have to start supercharging itself, so to speak.
That's correct, but I still think it's pretty remarkable that 500 years ago when Nostradamus made this prediction, that he would be able to identify 2017 in regards to solar power. Why wouldn't it be 100 years ago or 100 years in the future? Why? How would he know that this is the time when solar power is even being considered?
Yes, and that's this Alex Nobleman is reading these quatrains himself, and he's not telling us exactly which quatrains he's getting this from, so that would be useful to know so that we could examine it further to see how accurate or how exactly referring to it he is.
Yeah. Well, the number one, North Korea and South Korea merger. Wow, that's seems impossible. But well, North Korea and South Korea will merge. Kim Jong-un will be dethroned and will seek refuge in Russia. North Korea dictator Kim Jong-un is crueler and more dangerous than his father, the youngest scion of the ruling family, which has dominated North Korea for 65 years. He inherited the leadership of the Democratic People's Republic on the 17th of December of 2011, upon the death of his father. Since that dreadful day, Kim Jong-un has caused a perilous international crisis by testing a nuclear weapon and threatening to use it against America and South Korea. He also distributed a strange photograph of himself, purportedly in the act of ordering merciless nuclear strikes against the United States mainland.
Well, yeah, that is a big one. That would be, again, I'd like to see the quatrain which refers to this so I can determine how spot on that is and if that actually happens. These are the types of quatrains that I would like to see before. So many times when some major event such as 9/11 happens, then we hear about the quatrain which referred to it. So he is saying that this is going to happen. I'd like to know which quatrain that is from, or quatrains refer to this.
That would be very interesting. And just the fact that it would be in 2017 that North and South Korea would merge, it just, to me, it seems impossible at this point, but who knows?
Well, if something were to happen to Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, that would be the key.
Because he is more merciless than his father, if, you know, that's hard to believe, but he's younger and he's a little more brash and he's reacting, I think, as opposed to really thinking about the consequences. So possibly a faction over there may see that he's just way too dangerous and he's getting carried away and they may, decide to do something about that. Who knows? Well, but anyway, if that happens next year, this Alex Nobleman is saying that Nostradamus is predicting this in his quatrains. And again, I'd like to know which one. I don't want to have to read through all 942 of them to try to find which one he's thinking of, but
yeah.
Okay, and finally, from boingboing.net, in an article by Rob Bischiza of February 29th of 2016, entitled, Did Nostradamus Predict President Trump? He's mad, he's bad, and he's on track to be the Republican nominee for U.S. President in the 2016 general election, to the horror of everyone not already supporting him, including his own party. I've done some preliminary searches and found the following. Yes, I'm searching English translations off the internet for the word trumpet and orange. Hey, if Hister is Hitler, it'll do. My findings are quite disturbing. Now here he's giving the actual quatrain. And Century 1, Quatrain 40. The false trumpet concealing madness will cause Byzantium to change its laws. From Egypt there will go forth a man wants the edict withdrawn, changing money and standards. And he says, if you ask me, Nostradamus is pretty much nailing it right out of the gate here. Donald Trump, the false trumpet, is concealing his own madness. As U.S. president, he will cause Byzantium, i.e. Greece, a key entry point into the West for refugees, to change its laws. The president of Egypt will want the edict withdrawn, presumably because if the displaced millions are not going north, they're going south. As a result of all this, the euro collapses. Holy crap, we're four lines in and already on the brink of World War III.
Yeah, the problem is some of this, what he just said, is true. It's scary, but it's true.
You could absolutely see something playing out along these lines.
Well, continuing on in Century 1, number 57, the trumpet shakes with great discord, an agreement broken, lifting the face to heaven. The bloody mouth will swim with blood. The face anointed with milk and honey lies on the ground. If the first example was a sort of quatrain that shows off the Nostradamian illusion of specificity, this one shows off why he's so scary. Trump here is enraged. Someone or something has betrayed him. In the name of religion, he talks blood, and he ends up swimming in it. The land of milk and honey is, of course, Israel. The last line perhaps means he makes a big show of friendship and eating dirt for his efforts. Trump has described his intention of being a neutral broker between Israel and Palestine, the sort of hubris that could make things much worse when he learns everyone is smarter than he expected and not giving an inch. What options would President Trump then have, given a $700 billion military budget and a desperate narcissistic need to solve whatever problem is making a fool of him? And that's one thing that Trump does not like. He does not like to be criticized or made a fool of, and you just don't know what he's going to do whenever that happens.
Exactly. And he's got such a thin skin, can't take any criticism whatsoever, which is just does not make, well, first of all, for a very good person, and second of all, for a leader of any sort.
Yeah. I hate to get too political here, but it's worrisome.
Well, I don't consider this political. I'm not saying, you know, I'm for or against what party that he purports to be on, because he always had Democratic leanings before this. So it is, he's playing both sides of the fence. So it's hard, you know, to even nail down his ideological leanings. However, I'm just talking about the temperament of the man in this case.
I wonder what some people that are listening to these podcasts in other countries, what they're thinking when they hear or read about the political scene here in the United States. It must be kind of perplexing and frustrating to even read about it.
Well, and I think, it's almost like I've said before, with this sort of plot line happening, it's almost as if this is some sort of simulated universe and they're just amping up the story to ridiculous points. Like, how could this possibly happen? And why? It's just, if I were in another country far away, I'd be looking at it with great interest and not quite as concerned as actually living here right now. But still, you know, you have to be very concerned for the implications worldwide.
I totally agree.
Now, this is from Century 3 and Quatrain 50, and it reads, the Republic of the Great City will not want to consent to the great severity. King summoned by trumpet to go out. The latter at the wall, the city will repent. Such vague Nostradamus metaphors tend to have established interpretations, but for the purposes of blogging, this looks to me like Trump being unable to get America, the Republic, to go on some expensive military adventure. So he tells Britain, the king, to do the work. As it begins, ladder at the wall, America realizes it needs to do its part. Trump looks like a fool and must repent. This could be some kind of risky humanitarian thing that reeks of more immigrants, perhaps evacuating Tripoli from an ISIS siege, which would be ultra-Nostradamian.
In Century 10, number 76, the great Senate will ordain the triumph for one who afterwards will be vanquished, driven out. At the sound of the trumpet of his adherents, there will be put up for sale their possessions, enemies expelled. This one's easy but boring. The United States Senate makes a show of supporting Trump, but stabs him in the back. He's impeached or ditched after 4 years. But then, at the sound of the trump, his adherents will be there, selling their possessions and expelling enemies. The final apotheosis of Trumpism, the personality cult of a one-time loser. In a good Nostradamus book, there'd be a War Games-esque picture of Europe here, with arrows flying this way and that to indicate where the invasions and refugees are going, which Middle Eastern countries end up frozen in tranquil seas of glass, what year and month Jesus turns up, etc. All right, I'm already going to have nightmares. I'm done.
And I agree with that sentiment. Well, in conclusion, by 1566, Nostradamus's gout, which had plagued him painfully for many years and made movement very difficult, turned into edema, or dropsy. In late June, he summoned his lawyer to draw up an extensive will bequeathing his property plus 3,444 crowns, which is around 300,000 U.S. dollars today, minus a few debts to his wife pending her remarriage, in trust for her sons pending their 25th birthdays, and her daughters pending their marriages. This was followed by a much shorter codicil. On the evening of July 1, he is alleged to have told his secretary, Jean de Chavigny, "You will not find me alive at sunrise." The next morning, he was reportedly found dead, lying on the floor next to his bed and a bench. He was buried in the local Franciscan chapel in Ceylon, part of it now incorporated into the restaurant La Boucherie, but reinterred during the French Revolution in the Collégiale Saint-Laurent, where his tomb remains to this day.
John, as we were going along here, we talked about many things other than Nostradamus. We talked about many political things and worldwide events. At the bottom line, or the basic premise of our whole podcast today, were the predictions in the form of quatrains that he made. And we found, I think, many of them that seemed to fall into line with what came to pass. And that's the key. I think we mentioned that they can be interpreted sometimes in many ways. And many of these quatrains, I think, could be interpreted in many different ways, and it's just how you look at them. But there are some that we talked about that are eerily accurate, and that's the key. And what is surprising, or maybe not so much surprising, is the fact that his writings, his quatrains, have endured for 500 years or so, and that's hard to do. So there must be something there as far as he and his writings are concerned.
Well, it's those ones that he gets very accurate that we talked about today that make you look at the other ones. And I know the skeptics, as we said, a lot of them say, well, they're ambiguous, or how come we don't notice them until after, and then they fit the quatrains to what actually happened. But on the other hand, if you're reading one that takes place in the future and you just read it and you think, well, what the heck does that mean? I don't know what that means. But then when it happens, it does fit. You realize what he was talking about. Because as I said before, he's using his descriptions of the times. And some of them are when he uses the actual name, as he did with some of the people. De Gaulle was one of them, where he actually used the man's name. Well, you can zero in on that beforehand, but some of the other ones, it's hard to zero in beforehand, so you kind of have to wait until it happens in order to realize what he was talking about. So I don't think that necessarily discredits his work, because as we said, some of those were so spot on that it'd be very hard for a skeptic to deny those. So therefore, the rest of it lends credibility to all the rest of it, and for us to try to figure out what he's talking about.
Yeah, I agree, John. And like I said, his predictions have been out there for so long, and there's still fascination attributed to them that, you know, I got to believe that there is something valuable to looking at some of them closer. And like you said, the ones that have yet to come to fruition, the ones in the future, those are the interesting ones, at least as far as we're concerned. You know, we can talk about what happened in the past and compare his quatrains to that. But if he's going to be accurate in some of these future ones, that could be helpful and informative.
Well, absolutely. And some of those major ones, that's why we read some of those from 2017, even though we don't know which quatrains exactly that the person that we mentioned, Alex Nodelman, got those from. I'd like to know more about that to see, because if something happens with North Korea and it realigns with South Korea to become Korea once again, that's a major event, and that would prove to be another unbelievable prediction from Nostradamus.
And that's the one I'm going to be watching. If I suddenly turn on the news someday and that's what we hear, say something happens to the leader and he's deposed in some sort of or another, and then North and South Korea come together. If that happens, then that's going to make me much more of a believer than I might be right now.
Okay, well, who knows, Chuck? Some people could be listening to this podcast in 2017 or even 2018 and beyond, and they will already know whether or not that occurred in the year 2017.
Yeah, you're right. Well, all right, John, I don't have anything else. This was quite long. Do you have anything else?
Well, we could go on for a lot longer talking about all of Nostradamus' quatrains, but you're right, we covered a lot of territory today, and I think that's a good ending point.
I think so, too. So please visit us at MysteriousTopics.com and at our Facebook page. And this is Chuck. Goodbye.
And John, thank you for listening. Goodbye.